The following show is intended for a mature audience.
Nope, not for the kids.
So if you're underage...
Go to bed.
Easily offended...
Get over yourself.
Oh, you got a gigantic stick up your...
Oh, 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 hold it.
You might want to go do some needlepoint or something.
It's the Gentle Silverwing Show on online gaming radio.
It's time to kick your feet up, tune in and waste some time. You're gonna waste 2 hours on Gentle Show tonight.
Hey there, dwarf!
Hey, Jesus!
It's like a tragic tale, all the crazy things he makes us
do. Well, I'm just glad I got my ale.
Good evening, everyone. This is the Gentle Silverwing Show for the 8th of February, 2011. I am your host, Gentle Silverwing. With me, as always, my love, my girl, the Burning of Malloy's debate, the Taylor of Fine Armors, the Baker of Cookies, and the reason we have a mature audience warning at the top of the show, El Pajetta!
Hail and greetings. Boy, you stumbled on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, just a little bit. If you'd like to join in on the mayhem, you can log on to the in-game chat channel, which is guk.ogr, which is up and running 24/7, where the OGR elite come to meet. And, hun, you said there was an IRC chat going as well?
Yeah, they just need to go to onlinegamingradio.com. There's a little icon up at the top, says chat. It'll bring up the IRC interface thing. Because I don't know all the technical way to get them through IRC.
Okay, yeah, I thought you, your Dungeon Overlord people had a chat channel going on.
No,
yeah.
I'm on the OGR chat.
Okay, so just go to Online Gaming Radio, hit the little button for, what's it say, Talk Live, something like that? Let me bring that up. And you can, and Elquin is
monitoring
that one. I am monitoring the EverQuest 2 chat channel.
Which is why I'm not in game.
See here. If you'd like to download any of our skits, interviews, Gentle's parodies, Elquin's videos, and much, much more, you can find them at kithacore.org. Yes, it's a little button in the upper right-hand corner of the online gaming radio site that says Chat Live.
And that just brings up an web-driven RIC client.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Web chat brought to us by Global Gamers. Alrighty, so let's see what we got here. Before we get going on Dungeon Overlord, we do have a few things here. I'm sure Xanadi and Trueflight mentioned on EQ Tuesday a little earlier tonight that tomorrow starts the Illyrissi Day event.
Yay!
Looking forward to that. I know they're going to have a barbarian up in Kinos and in Freeport, who will trade in all of your old Illyrissi Day treats for the so you can combine them into one, just like they did for the Night of the Dead celebrations. That way, you don't have to have your backpacks full of all these miscellaneous trade skill items. You can just convert them all into one. So that's a good thing for this year.
It's excellent. It's
supposed to be a continuation of the Lovesworn, something like that.
Lovesworn. In other words, we get to find out more reasons why Illyrissi Mar is still dead.
Yes, thank you very much, Sony, for killing off the Goddess of Love. We really appreciate that. Moving on! Before we get going, we do have a couple of birthdays to announce. From the Antonia Bale server, Chromie, who is members of the Legion of Kithacor. I believe she also has a member in Moon Shadows under the same name. Chromie, little pretty fae. And also, Ryjackie. Ryjackie, I don't know what server she plays on, but Ryjackie is one of our community people. We love her to pieces. And actually, I keep forgetting to bring this up to you, Elquin. We actually have been invited to Seattle to have a birthday dinner with Ryjackie.
I can't wait. That's going to be a blast.
That's this weekend.
Okay.
So I told her that we get back to her as soon as possible to let her know when. And for those of you who work with potions and poisons, you may recognize the name Ryjackie. She actually had a poison named after her in EverQuest 2 called the Torment of Ryjackie. Let me link that in the chat channel. There we go. The Torment of Ryjackie is her. So she joins me in the club of people who've had stuff named after them. I will go ahead and just link mine in there just to plug myself a little bit there. Just Cuddly Companion is the level 40 Ranger
Pet. I thought
it
was 20. Oh, yeah.
40.
No? Yeah. Okay.
I'm looking right at it, hon.
Oh, fine. Be that way.
The level 21 is the Hawk. All right, so...
And 60 is the lion, isn't it? Lioness.
Yeah, there's a Rin's feline hunter. So, happy birthday to Chromie and Ryjackie. Here come the birthday trolls!
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you!
Happy birthday to Chromie and Ryjackie. Another year, another ding. Speaking of dings, we have a very special ding to announce. Member of the Legion of Kithacor, Necrotherion, just had a baby daughter yesterday. I don't know name, and I don't know name. Let me scroll up. I believe he said a weight. Let's see here. Dun, 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 dun. I have to scroll up and find it. It must be here somewhere. Here we go. I'm sorry, not yesterday. Born on the 3rd, 5 pounds, 8 ounces. I don't know names, I'm not going to mention names because it is a child. So, congratulations to Necrotherion. Yay! Alright, so tonight's guest is Chris Meyer, CEO of Night Owl Games, the folks that produce Dungeon Overlord for Facebook and Sony Online Entertainment. Chris, hello, are you with us?
Hey, I'm still here. How are you guys doing?
Oh, doing pretty good so far. Now, if you have any questions about Dungeon Overlord, this is the guy. This is the guy to ask. Speak up in the chat channels, whether you're joining us by IRC or in EverQuest 2. By all means, if you have any questions, this is the guy to answer them. And unfortunately, like I said before, I don't play Dungeon Overlord, so I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to you, Elquin.
Okay.
Because I honestly don't know what to ask.
It's very simple.
So go right ahead.
We somehow have to get you to play the game somehow. I don't know. We'll work on it.
Well, I'm working on it.
All right.
Chris, what can you tell me about Night Owl Games? This... Dungeon Overlord's your first
That's right.
title, isn't
it? It is our first title, yes. So Night Owl Games was established back in 2008 by myself and a few partners that I went to school with. And we founded it basically to bring games for gamers to the browser space. So what that means is games that gamers like myself and most of my friends really like to play, and something that we would find compelling to play in a web browser while we're at work, maybe, or, you know, someplace where we're not near our gaming rigs where we play the games we really enjoy.
And how well has this game taken off? I mean, it seems like, you know, everybody has jumped on it.
It's we're very, very pleased with the uptake. To tell you where the game is right now, the game is in beta still, and that means we really have not spent a dollar of marketing on this game. All the people that you see playing the game right now are generated entirely from word of mouth or from journalists like yourselves who are talking about the game, and then their audiences are trying it and picking it up. And so we purposely did that because we don't feel we're ready yet for a giant number of people like you see with some of these Facebook games, like of a million or plus. But we're very pleased to get the thousands of people that we have playing without any money spent at all on marketing.
Have you seen that they've started a wiki page even?
I have, and it's funny. It's outpacing our internal help pages, which we're trying to furiously develop to get some more documentation out about the game, and I fear we're never going to catch up to the fan wiki pages.
Is that helping, the fan pages?
It is helping, and I really like how the community is coming together to teach people about our game, which is complex in a lot of areas. So it's great to see this sort of fan these sort of fan efforts pop up to help out with a game like this.
I believe one of the members of we'll go into that later, but one of the members of announced, well, we're a player created guild, the Westward Allegiance. I believe one of the members is either started the wiki or is one of the main drivers of the wiki page, I think. They're not
sure. I'm not sure myself.
They're not saying anything right now, but I believe so. Well, I got some questions for you. I mean, what is the correct term for the land masses? Are they regions? Are they counties?
Well, let me break it down for you a little bit here. We'll go from the dungeon on up. So when you start the game, you're starting in your dungeon.
Right.
And then each mountain contains 25 dungeons. And then each region contains approximately 300 mountains. This is somewhat random per region. But the way the math works out is approximately 300.
Wow.
Then there are approximately 300 regions per continent. And there are 8 continents in the game.
Okay.
So that's sort of the hierarchy.
I was looking at some of the other regions in the other continents. I saw one called Goatfinger.
Yeah, Goatfinger.
And I did notice that in the current region in Solus, that's the one I'm in, I believe. Hang on.
Yes, I think that's the first one. That's the first continent.
Yeah, Solus. You guys have one called Burning Woods. Any of your developers play EverQuest?
Well, yeah, a few of our developers do have played some EverQuest. The names really did just come from, I guess, just from a couple of artists and designers who just made up the names one day. There's no rhyme or reason to them. They like in the case of Goatfinger, it's just the inspiration that came to the artist when he was looking at the continent. So,
Goatfinger, and I think there's one called Fish Feet or something like that.
But it's sort of a fun thing that the team did. It's like, you know, name a few regions, people, you know, threw some things out that they liked, and we put them in the game. So it was an opportunity for everyone to sort of contribute creatively.
Now, right now, the main populace is what, on Solstice? When a person starts Dungeon Overlord, are they just... everyone starting on Solstice, or are they being plopped down in other of the regions?
Now we purposely try to keep the players together by the time that they join the game, so that the people in their immediate area will approximately be the same starting level, so that there's not a huge disparity. Well, there will become huge disparities, but to at least initially start the game, people start around the same level, and we are just now, I think, beginning to see some people enter the second continent.
Really?
Yeah.
I know that they're populating Stonefall right now. Let me pop over to one that's next to it. Look real quick. Yeah, it looks like a lot of the land masses are getting full. Angel Vale has got some people in it. And I remember, a couple weeks ago, there wasn't anybody down in that area.
Yeah, it's filling up, and we think we still have some plenty of growing room, but that is something that we are aware of. We will probably open up some multiple servers to allow for the growth.
Okay. I know a lot of people have had questions about the different icons that you see in a dungeon. The difference that I've seen is the skull with a chain across its mouth and another one with just a smaller skull. Is there a difference between the two?
At the moment, the only difference is artistic. You see different icons. The smaller skulls are on the outside of the mountain, which represent exterior dungeons. The ones with the chains represent interior dungeons, and the ones on the bottom are starter dungeons. If you've noticed, the newbies start at the bottom of every mountain, and then all the ones above them are reserved for expansion. Now, at this moment in time, there is no difference between the dungeons you see in the top part of the mountain. They all function the same. However, that will change in a future patch. The different locations in the mountain will be meaningful.
Really?
Yes. For example, like the centerpiece the heart is going to be a very, very important location. And I am somewhat scooping some of the information we're going to be releasing very shortly about our first patch, but I'll go ahead and do it anyway. The heart of the mountain has been reserved for the person who will control the mountain. They're typically called the Lord of the Mountain or the King of the Mountain. And that individual will have the ability to upgrade the entire mountain and give everybody who lives in that mountain certain bonuses. And they will also have the ability to tax the dungeons within the mountain as well. So we feel it will be a very interesting political game between wanting to have somebody who's good for the mountain in the center location, but at the same time, if they become overtaxing or oppressive, then you might want to work with people outside of the mountain to get them out.
That is going to be interesting. I noticed that one of the future researches I was looking at allows you to, you have to have that in order to take over the heart of the dungeon?
That is correct.
Okay.
At the moment, though, that research won't even allow you to take over the heart of the dungeon. We've completely disabled
it. That's way up there.
Right, so... Yeah, I'm not sure anybody has the research to get up that high right now anyway.
But in case, we
disable that centerpiece.
Let's see. Overlord, it's under Overlord Mastery. It is like 21. Lord of the Mountain allows claiming the Heart of the Mountain. Or Mountain Heart, sorry. And it's like, buku research costs.
Yeah, it's pretty high up there. It'll be pretty interesting gameplay for anyone who managed to get up that high and can try to control the mountains.
Now, does a person have to have a dungeon and a mountain that they're going to take a heart from, or can they just come along and take a heart?
They can just come along and take a heart, but it won't be as simple as that. I mean, first, there will probably be somebody already in that dungeon, and then they'll have to contend with the people inside of the mountain, and if they do not like the outsider that comes in, they're going to have a tremendous logistical advantage because they are so close to the location.
Now, I know this has been brought up, and, people have been asking about, is there any way that they can mark the overland map to tell where their friends are from non-friends, instead of, actually knowing their location? Is there any plans for something like that, to be able to spot your friends' mountains easier from the overland? Map.
There are no concrete plans, but we are aware that it's something that the player base would really like. We think the easiest thing to do will probably be to add some sort of notes feature where you can make your own notes and stick them in there. The amount of data that we have to send down from the server to the client for that overworld map is actually pretty large. So we do try to keep additional data down to a minimum because it affects our loading times. However, we do need to do more to make it easier to find people in the game. So aside from talking about notes, we are talking about adding in like hyperlinks as well. so that you could jump directly to the mountain of your friend or from somebody who sends you a mail message or somebody who attacks you, so that you can know exactly where they are on the overhead map.
Okay. Because I know I've seen some posts on that. People want to put all sorts of stuff on the map to indicate dungeons that they've looked at and surveyed and what's in them. And,
yeah, totally. It is a tremendous idea. And it's giving the players tools to help themselves is something that's far more valuable, I think, than developers trying to figure out exactly what a player wants to see and then trying to implement that.
Now, I know I can go to my friend's dungeon and actually transfer items to them. But on the bottom bar where you've got your friends listed, when you go to give them a gift, all you can give them is, I believe, gold right now?
That's correct.
Will there be anything else that I'll be able to gift a person?
I hope so. Let me explain a little bit why that is. And if it gets too technical, you can slap me and say, no, that's too technical. But that friends bar actually lives outside of our game and talks directly to Facebook from the browser. The unfortunate thing about that is if you're outside the game, we don't know how many dungeons your friend has, if they have the inventory space for the thing you're sending them, and it leads to all kinds of headaches. But gold, however, does not have those headaches. Gold is shared globally across your dungeon, and there's no physical limit to the amount you can have. So gold was a very easy thing to allow us to transfer between friends, which is why we implemented that the first time. So in the future, we're looking at ways to get around that technical issue. But we don't have any sort of good plan right now. But we are aware that it's something people would like.
How about sending them a minion for a day or something? You know?
Oh, that's a cool idea. I never thought of that. That's,
you don't have
like
to
it.
Use. Yeah, you couldn't. You wouldn't. Shouldn't have. You could that. You don't have to use tangible items from the game. You could like, well, you know, I'll send my friend a minion just for the day or something. You know, they need a little extra manpower over there or something.
That's,
I don't know if
cool
it would
idea.
Take from your own or just create a minion for them to use for a day and then poof, they're gone.
We probably have to make some sort of trade-off like for something like that so that it's not overpowered, but
right.
It is a cool idea.
Let's see. Is there any way, is there something you guys are going to implement later that when you invite a friend to, that you, I know you said this is outside of what you guys are doing, or how it's seen, is it, but when I go to invite a friend, it always pulls up everybody. It doesn't pull up just the ones that I know that I've already invited, so I'm not sure if I'm re-inviting them or not. Is that going to change anytime soon?
Probably not anytime soon, but that's also a good suggestion. So part of the problem is that we developed the game, but we were not Facebook experts, so we still have some catching up to do with the other, more experienced social games that you see on Facebook. And that is one we definitely need to change. We should also probably change it such that we suggest friends for you to invite as well, like some of the other games do. However, we don't have that in yet. We're still sort of earning our Facebook chops and learning how to do stuff like that. But yeah, that's something that would be nice to have. We do not have a sort of concrete task on it right now, though.
Okay. Have you seen the different player-made guilds and alliances that have been popping up on the forum?
We have seen a few, and it's really cool, especially since we've given the players absolutely no tools whatsoever to form alliances within the game. It's kind of neat. I mean, people naturally, they want to group up. So it was a really difficult decision for us to launch the beta without all the in-game support for alliances. And this is going to get into some of the stuff we're going to talk about, I guess, later in the show, but alliances is definitely a top priority item for us.
Well, actually, that was my next one.
Okay.
I was going to ask if there's going to be any plans for guild or alliance tools in the game.
Sure. So, I guess technically right now you're playing version 0.1 numbered in our version database. So version 1.0 is something we are starting active work on. And the name of version of 1.0, which will be our first very large patch, is tentatively the Lord of the Mountain patch. And this includes the Lord of the Mountain game that we talked about earlier, as well as support for player profiles and alliances. So this will allow people to create a profile to tell people about who they are, leave a message out to the world, and display other interesting facts about their persona, and then allow people to create alliances, engage in diplomacy, display information about that alliance to all the other players around them, and to sort of start to engage in that alliance metagame, which does involve tactical control of the map.
Okay. Because I know, you know, me and a group of other people, we started the Windward Alliance. My tongue's all tied up. The Windward Alliance?
Windward Alliance.
Yeah. And we had Julio on, what, last week or the week before that?
Week before.
Yeah,
Julio. About 3 weeks now, actually.
And he's basically started it, and and then we've got up to about 32 players. We started a group on Facebook, and you know, that's what we've been doing. We've been doing trying to build alliances in the Windward area. We try to keep track of all our dungeons that each of us have. We try to use diplomacy when somebody gets attacked, and then we just go attack them.
yeah, cool.
But yeah, for lack of having tools, we jumped in and started our own. I know that there's another couple guilds in Windward that we're working with, so we don't just obliterate each other yet.
Sure. One thing I have noticed is that people are putting, I think, alliance tags in their dungeon names since we gave people the ability to rename dungeons. And that's pretty cool. We had not anticipated that when we launched the game. So I'm pleased that people did find a way to express their alliance in the game with the tools that we did provide, which was not many.
Yeah, I haven't done that to my dungeons yet, just for the fact that, well, I'm not certain if that's good or not yet, because if anybody's got anything against the TWA alliance, they'll be able to find us real fast.
Right, right. But it is a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, but it keeps members of our group from sending, you know, thieves in to check out our dungeons because they don't know that's us. We've had that a couple times. One of our members has a habit of doing that, Andrea. let's see, now where's my other questions? I know another question that a lot of people have been having is there going to be a full screen version coming where you can make it bigger?
Sure, not inside of Facebook. We've really had to push the limits of Flash for this game. I would go so far as to say it pushes limits more so than any of the other games I've played on Facebook. We've experimented with full screen, and it literally grinds the game to a halt as soon as we do that. So we could not ship with that feature. So we're looking into what it would take to make full screen. This will probably come in the form of a downloadable client sometime in the future, so that people can, you know, download the game and then install on their machine and then get a little bit more horsepower out of it.
Because that was going to be my next question, is if it was going to ever be, if it might be broken out as a standalone, or if it would always be tied in with Facebook.
Yeah, it is definitely something we want to do, is to make not only a downloadable version of the game, but also just a standalone browser game. So you can go to DungeonOverlord.com and just play the game there.
Right, that's, yeah.
Sure, and the downloadable thing is not something we have invested a lot of tech effort into, but the standalone browser game is something that we do play on our internal test shards with, so that is something that's very, very close. All it really needs, I think, is a little bit of UI work, then we need to hook up things like Facebook Connect and the Sony Station login support.
Yeah.
Okay, before you go on to the next question, we do have a few from the audience that I want to address.
I know. I will get to that.
Okay.
Trust me, I've been watching. We'll work our way back into that. Is there... God, now you've broken my train of thought.
Way to go.
If you do a downloadable client, will you still have the same dungeons and the same friends, or would that be starting out a new game?
Most likely you would have the same stuff. It would just be a different portal into the same world.
Okay.
I don't want to overcommit to that, though, because I don't know what the technological constraints will end up being, but I think it will be the same world.
And quests. Are there going to be any more? I'm sort of, you know, ran out of quests. I was enjoying those. That was one thing that just sucked me right on in, was all these little quests I get to do.
There will be more. We are limited, of course, by the amount of design time we have to put them in. What we are looking at doing is a systematic kind of quest where we can implement like a bunch of daily quests and let people log in, and they get a random spattering of things to do. for the game. But yeah, we realize that people really like the quests, and that's cool. So we can definitely provide some more.
Yeah, because the last one you've got is raise one of your minions up to level 50, and then that's it.
Yeah, then it sort of stops.
Yeah, and you're gonna go.
Huh? we'll put some more in.
Now, shocking the minions. Does it mm-hmm. really have an effect, or is it just more for visual fun?
Well, it's definitely fun, right?
Only when you do the goblins, because all of them get shocked at one time, see?
Sure. So for the goblins right now, it doesn't have an effect. It's just for fun. The other creatures, it does have an effect. The creatures have two stats on them called efficiency and happiness. Mm-hmm. And then when you shock a creature, you're trading some of the happiness for efficiency. So you can make them more efficient creatures, which causes them to do things like fight better in battle and research faster, that kind of stuff. However, if your creatures lose enough happiness, they will leave the dungeon. So that's your trade-off.
Oh, you shock them right out of your dungeon, huh?
You can shock them down to where they're low enough, and then if you miss a payday, they would be gone in one payday.
I didn't know you could actually lose them that way.
Now, you can't... I don't think you can lose a creature just from shocking it, because we stop you from actually shocking him past zero happiness. But if you shock him down to about zero happiness, and then you missed a payday because you didn't have enough gold or food in your dungeon, then you would lose them at that point.
So you could actually... Okay, but if they're happy and you, you know, miss logging in, and you come back and you find a bunch of hungry minions and they haven't been paid, they're not going to leave, right?
They will eventually leave. It takes a long time. If you don't use a shock at all, it takes a very long time for a creature's happiness to dwindle all the way down to zero. But if you miss enough paydays, then the creatures will get unhappy and leave the dungeon.
Okay. I know that there's been some questions about shocking the wizards.
Sure.
Let me see if I've still got it here. Hang on a second. They were wondering about the amount of shocking on a wizard. Let's see.
Shocking.
They
want to
know
should...
if the library cap is working with shocked wizards as intended or not.
Is the library cap working with shocked wizards intended? I would have to see exactly what results people are seeing, but I'll tell you the way it's supposed to work. Each wizard, I believe, gets 4 library tiles with the data that's currently up there. And the efficiency acts as a straight multiplier. So if you shock him up to 200 efficiency, it should roughly double his research output, if that makes sense. So the size of the library and the efficiency of the warlocks is not dependent on one another. So if your library is set up optimally with the right number of bookcases and tiles per warlock, and then you shock them, you should just see a direct increase in the amount of research that they put out.
Okay. I've always find it kind of hard to track down my wizards when I'm shocking them, too. It's like, hold still. Is there any going to be way to kind of, you know, group shock?
it's an interesting suggestion. Shocking was put in sort of as a mechanic to sort of provide some moment-to-moment fun. If it comes down to where people, though, decide it's not fun anymore and it's tedious because they just need to shock a bunch of creatures at once, maybe that's a feature we should put in.
Okay. Can you go over a list of the minions? I know we have goblins and orcs and wizards and ghosts and thieves and dark elves. And then they go up to Balrogs? Balrogs?
Right. That's correct.
And dragons?
There are, in fact, dragons, though I don't believe you can get them right now in the game. Sure, let me just go over sort of all the creatures. We have them broken up into 4 groups for the dungeon overlords and 2 groups for the NPCs. So the dungeon overlords, they start out in the humanoid group, which are the orcs, the goblins, the ogres, the dark elves, the dark priestesses, and the thief, and the warlock. So those are the ones in the humanoid group. And those, their roles are fairly well defined, because those were the first creatures we knew we were shipping the game with. The dark priestesses do healing. The dark elves are primarily for detection. They're also fairly good anti-warlock creatures, since they are ranged and they can take a little bit more damage than a warlock can. The ogres make pretty good tanks, especially on defense. Thieves are special purpose creatures for scouting and for trying to sneak in and steal stuff. And then warlocks are the research slash the ranged creatures. And then orcs are your general soldier type creature. And then so those creatures sort of play off each other's strengths and weaknesses. And they're working fairly well as designed, though we can talk about AI later on in the show if you want. The other creatures, the other two groups are undead and demons. And they are not as well defined because they are advanced creatures. But they will take on some hybrid roles and have some special abilities. The ghosts, you can sort of see what their role is supposed to be. They're the most efficient scouts in the games because they can fly over lava and they're invisible. So they do give you sort of an unprecedented ability to sort of scout things out and cover ground that way. The other creatures are, as some players have noted in the forums, not really worth it yet, because the basic humanoids that you can get cheaper actually do the same roles.
Right.
But something that we are implementing right now as we speak, this week, special abilities for the different creatures that are undead and the demons. Namely, a few of them will have an area of effect damage, so they'll be useful for clearing out dungeons that are full of lots of low-level creatures. The succubus will be useful for controlling individual creatures with her charm ability. And I don't want to go through all of the individual abilities in detail, but you sort of get where we're going with the high-level creatures. They will have more specialized effects that you can use in targeted strategic situations to help you get through some of the more challenging dungeons.
I can see as you're building your dungeon, as you get further and further along levels, that you probably will start changing the mix of what your minions are.
And that would be good. We do want to encourage people to get some of the higher level and we think are more cool minions. Some of the, I don't know if you've seen the artwork for all of the minions, but some of them look really, really nice in my opinion. And then some of the minions are designed to where you're only supposed to have a few of them, like the Balrog, the Lich, the Death Knight, and the Archfiend are designed to be pretty powerful but very expensive to maintain.
So it's not something you want a whole dungeon full of.
Right, unless you are like some super uber alliance leader and you have your entire alliance feeding you heart of the earth or some of those more expensive elements.
Right.
Sure.
Well, let's see. I've got some questions from the OGR channel. Let's see. Chatterella wants to know, when are you going to fix the bug that says, I don't have reinforced leather or goblin twine to train my thieves and dark elves when I have 10 of each in storage?
I think we'll fix that about an hour ago. So, that was the patch I was furiously working on right before the show. We believe that one's fixed. If it's not fixed on your client, you may have to clear your cache and try again. But yeah, it was a bug in our display in the user interface. We put that up tonight.
And they want to know... Han, how do you say her name? Mantra?
One second. Marinantha, I think.
Harry wants to know if there's going to be any chance for an iPad version of the game.
Steve Jobs, if he decides that he will support Adobe Flash, that would make it very, very soon. But right now, the Apple devices don't support Flash, so it would make it very difficult for us to port to the iPad.
Okay. I'm going to jump over to the forum and pull off questions that people have written in the past week or so. And Papa Bash writes, let's talk about the thieves. They seem like your way to give hardcore players something to do. They are rewarded with a lot of resources if they check in regularly and keep an eye on them. Is that something you intended from the start? Or is it stronger than expected, seeing how you just changed them and how players use them. What is their purpose in your eyes?
So the purpose of the thief is to scout and then to raid undefended or dungeons that are lightly defended against invisible creatures. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed one purpose too. It's to disarm traps. Thieves, when you send them with a group of creatures, you're primarily sending them to disarm traps to help your other creatures get through the dungeon. When you send them off alone, that would indicate you're trying to scout something, or you're trying to just to get an easy win on stealing resources for a dungeon that does not have enough thief detection in it. I think we're finding that they might be a little bit overpowered for NPC raids, because the NPCs tend to not have enough detector units in their villages to effectively stop a thief. So players have found that they can just send their thieves out to the villages pretty much with impunity and then just and raid them dry.
Yes.
And whether that will change or not is something that we'll still discuss. I mean, villages are not designed to be overly challenging. They are designed to be something sort of a farmable resource.
They farm them regularly for leather.
And that's why leather only exists in the villages. The issue, though, there were some things that were blatantly overpowered about thieves, and one was that they always stayed in stealth when we launched the game, so they could destroy creatures that were way higher level than they were, and that was not a good thing for the game. So we implemented the backstabbing ability for the thieves, so they get an advantage when attacking from invisibility, but then it's not such an overwhelming advantage.
No,
they can't just go and destroy a 50 level orc.
I actually watched that. One of my dungeons got attacked, and I saw my two little thieves sneaking over and invis sort of sneaking up where the guys were coming in, and then they attacked and then they showed up. But I thought that was pretty cool. let's see, what was the next question? On the loading screen, you get this little thing in the corner. It says "Coming soon."
Yeah.
What's going to be there? What's coming?
Well, the coming soon was we threw that in at the last minute because we knew players would be interested in what we were working on, but we did not really have a good plan for updating that little box, and we've now found that that little box is just not even sufficient sidewise to talk about the things we want to talk about. So we should probably just remove the little coming soon box for now. Our UI guy is working on a better coming soon system so that we can display different messages when the loading screen is up and when you're switching between dungeons, and then also display alerts to the players, like if we have an emergency maintenance or something like that. So that was a bit of a hasty job on our part when we launched. So right now, the only way to really find out about coming soon is to listen to this show and then look for our posts on the forums.
Okay. This is some more of Papa Bash's questions. How do you want Facebook as a social network intertwined with Dungeon Overlord? Can we expect you to go into something like Mafia Wars, where you are literally forced to add hundreds of people to be somewhat competitive and overflowing with in-game rewards that friends send you, or do you aim for something smaller?
Yeah, absolutely we do not want to be obnoxious. One of the requirements when we got into the Facebook space was that we would not do the things that made us quit Facebook games. Things that regularly make me quit Facebook games are spam and making me invite 1,000 friends to progress in the game.
Yes.
This is the Dungeon Overlord is a game first, and it's a Facebook game second. And we actually believe that is a good strategy for going on to Facebook as an independent developer, because that is something that the very large players in the Facebook space are just not doing yet. Anyway, they are very much focused on getting people forcing people, I would say, rather, to invite thousands and thousands of people. Whereas we'd rather, I think, focus on making a fun game that people want to invite people to.
Because the other part of his question, I think, is sort of answered with the next update when you bring in guilds or alliance-type things. He said, do you play with your friends, fight together against other groups, or do you want to keep it more of a solo game as it is, like it is right now?
Right. We like for the new players to have it be a somewhat of a solo game. I've played a lot of the web strategy games out there, and some of them can be very, very, very newbie unfriendly when it comes to large alliances picking on the newer players. It is our design goal, and I hope we can achieve this goal, to add in enough content for alliances to where they focus on competing with one another. I won't necessarily say fighting with, but competing with one another, and that the new players have a chance to actually learn and enjoy the game before they get into the overall arching strategy game.
Okay. Mies wants to know, what are your plans for PvP? What's your thoughts on that? Because since it is sort of eventually going to be a PvP type game,
right,
where you go attack other players' dungeons.
Right, and that is in there now, and people are, I think, are somewhat, some people are very timid right now of engaging in PvP for fear of reprisal from larger numbers of players, which we have seen happen, where people will do little one-on-one PvP battles and get stomped by about 10 people,
mm-hmm,
because they organize their friends to go get them.
Yeah.
And especially without alliance tags, I think it adds somewhat to the mystery. Are you attacking somebody who's well-connected with friends, or are you attacking somebody who's a loner and therefore an easier target? The alliance game will probably take some of that mystery away, so you'll know who the loners are and who the well-connected people are. But I think, like I said, the design goal is to get the alliances focused on one another. And that will be achieved through things like the King of the Mountain, where you're vying for control of mountains on the map, because they will give you a very big resource advantage. And then other features which are less well-designed that will hopefully get alliances competing for overall control of the continents and the world.
Touching back on Heart of the Mountain, when you say when a person takes it over, they can update the mountain, and in other words, if you get a dungeon and may not have all the resources you need, you may end up getting it later on from the person who runs the Heart of the Mountain?
Well, they may not have the ability to grant resources to dungeons, but there will be things like strategic bonuses, like efficiency bonuses into mining, defense and attack bonuses, and then other bonuses that we just haven't designed yet or thought of.
Okay. All right. Let's see, what was the next question? This one comes from Stick Riptide. This is off of the forum. How is the payment model working so far? I know that I've found myself spending station cash almost willy-nilly, relatively speaking, compared to other SOE games. Is the income at expected levels?
Okay, so this is a very interesting question. It talks a little bit about the business on Facebook. We are seeing more people spend money on this game than we had expected. So the volume of people spending money is much higher. However, in Facebook, there's a class of players that are, I guess, called whales. They're the high spenders. And it looks like we're not offering enough for the high spenders to spend on our game. We did well as far as convincing people that it was a good idea to spend money on the game, because we are seeing a lot of people do it.
I have fun of doing it. Yeah.
Thank you. But
those 25 extra tiles and that extra goblin every time, it's like,
those are by far our most popular selling item. But yeah, we need to do more to allow people who want to spend more on the game to do so.
Okay. And the next question he has, this is still Riptide. He's got like six questions, by the way. What will be the impact of Facebook's announcement that credits will be the only virtual currency at some point in the near future?
Sure. This is something we are working with Sony on. This is something that Sony will have to support across all of their games on Facebook. And we will likely integrate whatever their solution is for our game. I'm not exactly sure what that solution is yet, but we have to figure it out before July, I suppose, because that will be a requirement from Facebook.
Yeah, they're going to... I know Zynga is going to be in trouble, too, because they've done a lot on that with their currency. I don't know how that's going to work out either.
Well, I mean, I think the easiest answer will be to allow people to purchase station cash with Facebook credits, but... Again, I'm not going to try to speculate exactly what Sony's going to do to solve this problem.
I need to go back to the Heart of the Dungeon again. I missed a question. Is there going to be special nodes in the Heart of the Dungeon?
Like special resource nodes?
Yes.
No. There are no plans right now anyway for having unique resources in the hearts. Though it is an interesting suggestion. I'll have to keep that in mind.
Slick Riptide still wants to know, let's see, what is the end game of Dungeon Overlord?
The final, the sort of end game is not something I'm prepared to talk about. Talking about the Heart of the Mountain and the alliances is something I am comfortable doing.
That's
true. We do have, you know, plans for, you know, world domination kinds of end games, but exactly what that means and what the future set is, we're not prepared to talk about it.
That's fine. I knew there was going to be some questions that came up, I'm asking them.
But we do know that there needs to be an end game, and it will be geared towards alliances and large groups of players.
Okay. He wants to know, what is the purpose of stone gating? Simply to move to where your friends are, or will there be some advantage to attacking players on other regions in other continents?
Yeah, the purpose of stone gating, which is not implemented yet, but will be part of the alliance patch, is for covering vast distances quickly. So it will be used for both good and for evil. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Keep going.
I guess that's all I was going to say on it. So, yeah, it will serve as both a strategic advantage in the economy for trading and also for attacking.
Okay. Because I'm being asked, can you have dungeons in more than one of the land masses?
You can.
Not starters, but normal ones that you can take over.
Correct. You can expand to another landmass, though that would be... It would be logistically difficult for a player to keep up. However, it is possible.
Yeah. Unless your bases are really strong, then you could probably...
Right. What I have seen...
Start all over. Basically, you're starting all over in another landmass, because it does take a bit to transfer supplies back and forth. We're not talking... 30 minutes or 60 minutes. We're talking days.
Right. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
And in similar games, I have seen alliances that have established beachheads in unpopulated places on the map, and they do so by having all of their members contribute one or two cities to that area that their alliance is trying to claim. So, I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing to do in Dungeon Overlord. It's not something that I've tried, but it's something that is possible.
Julio wants to know, are they going to fix the fact some people moved their starters?
Some people, I guess, were able to move their starters because of a bug. We're not planning on forcing people to reestablish their starters. We are talking, though, about adding the ability for people to abandon a starter and go somewhere else. The only reason that we're a little hesitant to do that is we don't want to inadvertently screw a new player who doesn't know what they're doing. So we have to think of, you know, maybe to throw up enough warning dialogue. Are you sure? Are you really sure you want to abandon your starter dungeon?
Yeah, because the way I understand it, if your expanded dungeons, you know, if they get taken over eventually, you always have your starter dungeon to fall back on. The starter dungeon cannot be taken from you.
That is correct.
So you need at least your starter dungeon no matter what as a fallback.
Right. The starter dungeon was designed to be a place where you can always go to regroup.
Yes.
And that's what it's there for. If I'll give people the ability to abandon their starter dungeon and they ever are forced into that situation, they will have to start from ground zero again in a brand new dungeon.
And will stone gating, will that allow for faster movement for purchases and deliveries? I think there's another thing that allows for that.
Sure. So I guess I'm going on the record talking about stone gating. That top dungeon in the mountains, I think people might have noticed, has a little stone platform at the northern entrance. It's like a little 3x3 area of rock that the players cannot build on. And some of them have asked me, hey, can we get rid of that rock there so I can build some of my tiles? And the answer is no. That platform will serve as a very important thing with stone gating, in that that dungeon represents the target of stone gates. So when you want to stone gate from one mountain to another, then you'll be going through that dungeon at the top of the mountain, if that makes sense.
Right.
Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you always have to fight that person. So the person who controls that stone gating dungeon isn't going to be mobbed by everybody as they teleport around the map to go into that dungeon. But it does serve a certain strategic importance.
And I know that you can build a... what was it? I just got it, too. Portal.
The portal room, yes.
Yeah. What purpose? Because I haven't actually built one yet, but I have the ability. But
yeah, right now we gave some sort of some movement bonuses to goblins for some of the furniture in the portal room. That's just sort of filler. The eventual goal of both the portal room and the coven is to allow people to use stone gating, and to the dungeons that have the portal or the coven will be allowed to take part in the teleportation from their dungeon to another mountain.
Okay. One of the ideas that they had for the coming soon area is maybe a scoreboard.
Leaderboards is something we want to be locked.
Who's the top overlord this week? Let's see. Stick Riptide wants to ask. I've had two reprisals so far. The first was 2 level 1 footmen. The second was 17 level 5-8 soldiers. When I finally earned a third reprisal, should I be preparing for 120 level 20 soldiers? What should a player who raids regularly expect when he gets attacked by NPCs? In other words, when he goes to attack, he gets this little amount attacking him. The next time he goes, he gets a little bit stronger. And you know, what is he going to
probably right? We should probably do a post to demystify the way hate works with the NPCs at some point. So I'll just try to cover it at a high level here. So what you have to fear when you raid the Elven humans depends on a few things. One is how much hate you have built up already, and the other is what are the military structures in the area that you are raiding. If you are lucky enough to find a village that is nowhere near a military structure, which is like a citadel and a castle and a fortress, then you can raid that thing with impunity. You will never get reprisals from anywhere. Conversely, if you raid a village that happens to be near several military structures, you can expect to get raided quite frequently. And the severity of those attacks, it goes up depending upon your hate level and also which military structure attacks you. So you need to be careful if you're around a very strong presence on the map when you're doing your attacking, and vice versa. If you're at looks like a frontier, where there's just a bunch of little villages and cities, then you can raid more freely.
So does hate degrade over time? So if you hit someplace...
Hate degrades every time you get attacked. So every time a NPC attacks you, your hate goes down somewhat.
Okay. So the hate continues to grow until they attack you.
That is correct. So if you get lucky or unlucky, depending on how you phrase it, and you manage to go on a whole bunch of raids without ever getting a reprisal, that next one might be a real doozy.
I think I'm overdue. So they were asking, is it better or worse to attack a village with a single protector compared to one with two or more protectors? Does each protector earn hate equally, or does the hate get divided between them? I mean, is it better to send a bigger party, or just one, or...
Yeah, it is. You will get more attacks if you have if you're attacking a village with two or three protectors versus one with one. Now, depending on how you have your dungeon set up, you might want those attacks. Some people like to farm the attacks coming in because they've built, you know, death traps out of high level creatures and traps they have in the hallway. But yeah, you can expect more attacks if you have the two or three near you. And I believe the hate increases independently. So they don't get divided between the two. They both go up the same amount.
Okay. And he also wants to know, what are the 1-year and 5-year plans for Dungeon Overlord as far as development of new content and new goals to keep the game fresh and interesting?
Sure. So the one-year plan is to first work on just overall development priorities. We actually, you know, we have a lot of bugs we still need to fix, and we need to tweak and improve the AI, and that's sort of our highest level priority are those things. And then beyond that, we're looking at implementing the patch we talked about with the alliances, the profiles, and the Lord of the Mountain. Then beyond that, we have to finish the end game, which is sort of strategic conquest of the world. And that would be sort of our one-year plan, maybe, our one-year plan. Now, beyond that, it depends on a lot of things. It depends on, what the players are saying at large. I think it would be folly for me to speculate what the players want a year from now. And that certainly has to be taken into account. And then it also depends on how much money we're making. So if we are a very successful game, then there are a lot of things that I would like to see this game do, including things like letting people play the good guys and build elven towns and things like that. But that largely does depend on our budget and profitability, is whether or not we can do those sorts of things.
Okay. Papa Bash has another question. Wants to know how they plan to keep the areas populated, with the market being a regional one and players that actually only leave the area and don't start out there again. I guess what he's getting at is when you get stone gating, you can go to another region where nobody's at. And what happens if people eventually just start, leaving the areas that they were at and taking up dungeons in a whole other area, and then the region that they started in, all they have is their starter, and then all their other ones are someplace else? Is there going to be, leapfrogging through the different regions? How are they going to repopulate the other places?
Sure. Well, we do have the ability to backfill. If the enough starters became dormant in an older region, then new players who join the Shard can backfill into those places. Now, we don't want to do that as much as possible, because we want new players to start in the same areas. That's one of the reasons why the starter dungeons are reserved at the bottom of the map, so new players cannot go and take starter dungeons all over the map. Where were they going with that? Anyway, we do have the ability to backfill. We don't think it will be a huge problem with migration, because there is no sense of consuming all the resources in a region. You can't mine everything out. So maybe some alliances will want to leave and go to unpopulated continents, but eventually those continents will also populate as well, and then create conflict by doing so. And conflict will be created, of course, because not all dungeons are equal. Some are better than others, and they will be fighting over those better dungeons.
That was another question I had from Julio. He wanted to know if the nodes are generated in a dungeon completely random, or are they set in sequences?
They are completely random.
And are there plans to fix the black market, like make weekly sales on some resources or something of that nature? Fire sale on the black market!
That is an interesting idea. The black market was created as a sort of catch-all if for some reason our random number generator was screwed up and there were not enough resources to support a population on a continent. Well, you could always default back, go to the black market and buy stuff. We hadn't really intended it to be used for anything more than that. So, things like fire sales is nothing that we ever thought of. Something we can bounce around, or if there's huge support for that, like on the forums, if we want to see more interesting black market stuff, we can definitely talk about it. One of the interesting suggestions I saw for the black market was allowing people to sell stuff to the black market, so it sort of serves as a catch-all the other direction for people who have a lot of useless crap they want to get rid of. That I thought was another interesting idea for the black market.
I think that would be good. Let's see. Papa Bash was busy on the forums. How do they plan to address the problem that every dungeon lord has more warlocks than anything else, or is that what you want? Do they plan to detach certain monsters from their research roles so that we will see more broad view or a broad variety of dungeon building and army compositions?
Right. So The obvious way to balance that, of course, is to tweak it such that a dungeon full of warlocks gets steamrolled by ogres and orcs. I don't think we're there yet. I think if you lay out your dungeon right, the warlocks are pretty darn powerful on defense. So I think we have some work to do there to balance that. But to play theory craft a little bit, a dungeon full of only warlocks should be vulnerable to attack. And that should be the sort of balancing factor. And beyond that, there are plans to make some of the demons and undead researchers as well, so that you can do research with other creatures besides warlocks.
That would balance it out. What do they plan for upcoming noob protection? After all, it seems possible for a high-level overlord to gate to a newly started area and build up the expansion right off the bat. With the technology he possesses, he could dominate the map and being untouchable and benefit from the new market lacking every resource. He could assume monopoly pretty much as long as he wishes. If he does it correctly, he can stop progress of other players in any region but research.
That would be interesting to see. So the current sort of newbie protections that we have in place, which may or may not be enough, are the ability to dodge attacks and save storage. The intent is if you are a new player and there is a big bully in your mountain, that you can still progress using entirely those two mechanics by setting your creatures to dodge and to keep all of your resources in the safe storage levels. And then you add a few traps into that, it becomes a net loss for the bully. Every time they attack the dungeon, they always lose something, whether it's hit points or actual creature deaths due to the traps. And at the same time, they gain nothing because it's all hidden away in safe storage. That is the intent of the design. Now, whether a warlord was able to effectively control a monopoly on a faraway region like that is interesting. I'm not convinced that it is possible. Maybe somebody will prove me wrong and go ahead and do it. We'll have to deal with that if it does become a problem. But at the moment, we're hoping anyway that the current mechanics we have in place would make that very difficult for someone to accomplish. And then later on, once you have the advantages of working together to upgrade a mountain, that warlord would find that the other warlord who set himself up in the heart of the mountain and then helped nurture the newbies to help create a more powerful mountain would actually have an advantage. So we'll see how that works out.
Are you guys planning for any graphic changes on a mountain that has the heart taken?
We do have some concepts for that, but I'm not sure it's going to pass the technical tests of how much slowdown that will put in the overworld map.
Okay.
Sorry to expand on that, it's quite possible we'll see that all the mountains become controlled very, very quickly, and thus any sort of visual distinction we put on the map would just become redundant.
Yeah. Is the current safe storage system designed to be incentive for players raiding, given that once you have stuff unsafe, everything can be grabbed, even crafted resources, or is it still more of a placeholder system with lots of differences in the future?
So right now it's not considered a placeholder system, but it is something that we are keeping an eye on. One of the designs when we were making the game was to have every individual item have its own safe storage, and we tossed that around for a while, and we weren't happy with how that was presented to a player. It was pretty darn confusing. We have the current safe storage system in because of that. And when I say we're keeping an eye on it, it's functioning exactly the way we wanted it to, where people keep a lot of useless stuff to try to reduce the probability that that people will be able to raid the more interesting stuff.
All right.
But right now it is doing the job of helping keep the newbies safe. So we don't want to tweak it too much right now.
Okay. How important is the tactical component in a battle for them? Is the AI how we have it? Let me reread this guy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, let's try that one again.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to read like you wrote it, and it's like, nah. Well, how important is the tactical component in a battle for them? Is the AI how we have it? The end of the road, or do we wish for more player action, maybe during combat or in preparation of the combat?
Got you. Okay, so I think I understand the question.
Okay.
And if the person who asked the question isn't satisfied, they'll have to ask again on the forums. Well, the AI is constantly being tweaked. It is not at the level yet that we would like it to be. The more immediate fixes include some of the problems where creatures will circle and dance around each other instead of fight. So we have fixes going in for that. And then we have some weird instances where melee creatures will pass up good targets and instead let the weaker ranged creatures engage them, and then the weaker ranged creatures end up getting mobbed and killed. So some of that I'm working on. And then I believe the other part of the question was, do we want to give the player more involvement? And that's sort of a two-parter. The first part is during combat. The answer is no. We cannot allow a player to make tactical decisions in the middle of a combat, because that would give a tremendous advantage to the person who is actually online, which is almost 100% of cases the attacker.
Compared to somebody who's offline and they know their dungeon's going to be attacked, you got to put your faith in your minions.
Exactly. So letting one person be able to make human decisions and have the other person be reliant solely on the AI is not a balance problem that we are prepared to engage in.
We're overlords, damn it. We're supposed to let the minions do the work. We're not supposed to soil our hands. They're supposed to take care of our dungeons.
They're supposed to be smart enough to do that.
Yes.
But they're goblins, so they're not. So the other part of that, though, was do we want to give players a little bit more control during setup? And I think the answer to that is yes, we would like to. I think we're looking at ways to give players more control over where things spawn, at least probabilistically. Is that a word, probabilistically? And do that. And right now, I think from the attacker standpoint, the only sort of decision you have is what order to send the creatures in, and do you want to put any time spacing in between them, sort of like you're creating a wave to send against somebody's tower defense map. And then we are looking at ways maybe to improve that, where especially with the high level creatures and what abilities they have, some choices there to give the player a little bit more control. So that hopefully that answers the question in a very roundabout way.
Yeah, teaching the Broglock not to eat certain creatures.
Right.
Balrog.
Balrog is what?
Teach the Balrog not to eat the dark elves because it gives them gas or something. No balrogs this time. Okay, what about spells? Is stuff like that in the planning, basically as another way to attack other players or help friendly ones or impact the battle outcome? We already have a elemental system in place that could be used of it, and items and rooms that have the wording mana and spell casting in it. Is it fitting into the theme, so that is your standing to spells?
I think it's fitting. It is not something that we currently have planned. The only spells we do have planned are spells that creatures can cast, not spells that overlords can cast. However, it's a very interesting suggestion. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Do you guys plan to activate the stats besides HP and damage, like defense?
They are active. the stats are there's hit points and damage, which are very clear. There's also the AP and DP, which are the attack power and defense power. Those are actually working as well. Those both affect a creature's ability to hit. You can think of AP as accuracy and DP as dodge. So that a creature with high DP is difficult to hit, unless he's counterbalanced by somebody who has high AP. Awareness range is active as well, so is range. There's probably others that I'm not remembering. But, yeah, all those should be active.
Okay, I got a couple more questions, and I think we're winding down. Have I wore you out yet?
I'm out of my coat, but I'm still going strong.
Cromwell is going through gold like crazy. Can we sell materials for materials? Or is that in the works?
They're
putting up trades.
Oh, sell...
In other words, hold instead on. Of selling, trading.
Oh, sure. So, like, having a buy mechanic? Right.
Yeah, like, I have iron and I need fire. Can I just put up a trade for iron to fire, saying, well, I'll trade X amount of iron for X amount of fire?
There will probably never be a system for that explicitly. We'll always have to go through gold. But I would like to see the ability to put up a buy request saying, like, hey, I will buy 500 units of fire at this price, and then a seller can go buy and sell that for gold. The only way to do a resource-to-resource transaction is actually send mail to another player, somehow advertise that you're willing to do this, and then set it up sort of as a private transaction. But yeah, any enhancements to the market system that we do would be using gold as the currency.
Okay. Can we get rank advancement for certain units that survive multiple waves or raids, or bonuses like plus speed, attack, or defense?
That is an interesting suggestion. I never thought of it before. So that's cool.
It's from Julie, you know, by the way.
All right. Yeah, I don't want to commit to that, but it's a cool suggestion.
Okay. And believe it or not, I've exhausted all the questions.
Wow.
All right.
That was a lot. Did I put you through the ringer? I know.
Oh, no, that's cool. I actually enjoyed it a lot. So it's really awesome to be able to talk about this game that we've all been loving, you know, for the amount of time that we've worked on it. So.
Can you talk about the number of players so far?
Boy, without a Sony person here,
side on the side of caution. Don't worry. But
I will say that I echo something we said before. We're pretty happy with the response that we're getting.
Okay. Is there any tips or tricks that you're willing to share? I mean, the one trick that I learned from Julia was to send in thieves on these little villages just to get leather. And after I did that, it was like, yeah, I'm in business. Because I was surely struggling there for a long time trying to get enough leather to do anything. Yeah, so that's a little tip.
Thieves are a great way to farm leather. Just be careful you don't build up your hate, you know, terrible, terrible much. But another good way to get leather is to set up a death trap for the NPCs that do invade your dungeon. And you can do that by setting up some of the nastier spike and fireball traps in sequence right in front of your entrance, so that when the NPCs come in, they'll get clobbered by that. And if you augment that by having the library nearby but not connected to that initial path, then the warlocks will participate in the damage dealing.
A gauntlet.
Yeah, it becomes a gauntlet, and then you'll find when you log in some nice little treasure chests that the NPCs have left behind for you.
There you go. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add, Chris?
No, this was a lot of fun, and I wanted to thank you for having me on the show. It's a real treat.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
I know he hasn't enjoyed it, but I've really enjoyed Dungeon Overlord.
Well, great. I'm happy to hear that. So it's always cool to hear that somebody's having fun playing the game.
And I know 32 other people are enjoying it, too.
Cool.
How do you know 32 other people are enjoying it?
Because that's the number in the Windward Alliance.
Oh, I see. So there's only 26 people listening.
Yeah. No, we got 32 of those guys. Well, you know.
Jeez. All right, right on.
All right, Chris, thank you.
I'll request people to sleep, but that's okay.
Chris, thank you very, very much for joining us this evening. I know as you know, in your position, you're a very busy person, and you know, you said yourself you had quite a patch going on today, an update. And
yeah, but thanks for having me on. I mean, it's been a real treat, like I said.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sure Elkman's going to try to get you on here again. You know, sometime
in a later
in the future.
Date. Yeah.
Sometime in the future.
I'll be happy to do it. Happy to do it. It'd be fun.
Excellent. Okay. All right, folks, we're going to take a little bit of a music break here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. We're going to talk a little bit about EverQuest. We've got some stuff coming up in-game. I'm sure the folks at EQ Tuesday already covered some of it, but heck, we're going to go ahead and talk about it. Take a little bit of a music break. Be back in about 10 minutes.
First, the horse!
She's a brick in the house. Yeah, she's got some magic.
Stop that! Right, stop that! Silly!
Okay, and we're back.
Compared to being front?
Or grooving side to side. Okay, so let's see. Tomorrow...
Well, I was going to say thank you.
For?
Letting me do that and boring you to death.
Well, it's all right. You know, I did actually get a lot of comments in private tells and in the LOKOC channel.
Oh, more like get her... Have her do this someplace else.
Yeah, have her do her own job. Actually, I told you earlier, I think you ought to find someone from the Facebook gaming community and start up your own show.
I don't know.
I didn't know.
Oh, I think you did fine tonight. You did fine, and you did fine when Julio was here, too.
Well, I don't think I could keep it up, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, there is so much you can talk about. Yeah, this week we're talking about Cityville. Good God, will you people stop sending me the?
Yeah, just wouldn't work. There's only so much you can talk about.
This week on Cityville Talk, for God's sakes, I need more zoning permits. Oh boy. Tomorrow.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow starts the Illiracy Day event.
Really?
In EverQuest 2. And from what I understand, it's only taking place in Freeport and Kinos. They have not expanded it to the other cities. There is going to be a... We mentioned this earlier. There will be a barbarian merchant who will trade in your old... trade skill, fuel type things into a, into one item, just like they did for the Night of the Dead.
Yay.
So there is
no
that.
More, like, you know how much storage space I have devoted to all the different hearts and candies and notes and stuff?
Quite a few, I'm sure.
I enjoy them. They all have such nice, interesting, things on them. I'd have to go to the bank to pull them out, but that's one of the reasons I like getting them.
Yeah. And they're going to be expanding on the Lovesworn quest.
Lovesworn, yeah. Where we get to find out more why Illiracy is dead.
We're probably just going to go up to the Lovesworns and go, yep, she's dead.
She's dead.
Told ya.
You wouldn't listen.
Oh, no. Wouldn't listen to us, would you? Now you just gone on off to the shot of love, and you see she's dead! Oh, Elder Rock has won!
Yep. And I'm sure they're going to talk about, oh, well, she's not really dead. Her spirit's all around us. Blah, 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 blah. Sorry.
Blah.
It's not like we can... pray to her like the other deities or anything, or
I think we should be able to.
What happens if I want to really become a devotee of you know, is there such a title to become a devotee of Illiracy?
Yeah, you get it through that hug quest. No, there was a quest you did running back and forth to Hollis when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I think you got devotee of Illiracy, something like that. It was for visiting her tomb or her memorial. You get some kind of a question. Let me take a look at my...
I might have it.
More than likely. Let's see here.
Option. Okay, that would be a suffix.
Well, there's a Disciple of Illiracy.
Yeah, I have that. Disciple of Illiracy.
And then, no, of course, there is of Illiracy Mar, but that was because I came from the Illiracy Mar server on EQ1.
Me too.
I think that's it. And then from the hug quest, you got, like, the passionate, the romantic, the heartbreaker, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I got that.
Oh, you know what? With Illiracy Day around the corner here, that marks the one-year anniversary where I got my Minstrel of Kithagor.
That's true.
Title.
Yay. You got it last year, around this time.
Oh, that's right, I'm sorry, it's the Rose Quest.
Right, handing out the roses.
Right, it's a Rose Quest, that's right. And let's see here.
What's that? want to hand out any more roses. Do you know how many roses I handed out?
I'm hoping they didn't expand on it, because I gave out 1,000. I got the Heartbreaker.
I got the Heartbreaker, too. I got the Heartbreaker before you did.
Yep.
I remember, right?
See, and I'm seeing here in the marketplace, there are 2 new items.
There is?
The Robe of the Frost Mage and the Chillborn Bow. I'm going to link those in the channel.
It's a robe?
Yes.
Okay, so robe.
I'm going to link those in the channel here.
Oh, it's a white outfit with a funny hat. It's nice. What's the other one?
I like the way the robe looks. And there's a Chillborn bow, which is the design of bow that I'm not really thrilled with. It's one with the blades in the front, but it's white.
I like the one with the blades in the front. That's pretty.
I don't know. Looks more like some kind of Klingon weapon.
Alpha.
Than a functional bow.
I like it, but I like my. The one I got from Shard of Love better.
Mm.
Oops. Where is it?
No, I like the robe.
I have Ilarussi's Lost Longbow.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that drips hearts or something like that, or rose petals?
No, it drips rose petals, but it really looks like blood.
Of course.
You know, I think it looks like blood.
Mm. No, I like the robe. If they came out with different colors of this pattern, I think a lot of people would get it. The white and the slate blue, just a little boring, but I do like the pattern. So I think if they actually release this in different colors, I think they'd do better with it.
Well, they might. Give Nauburn a chance.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't know if Nauburn did this one.
Well...
But, you know, it is the robe of the Frost Mage, so they had to make it white.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what it would have added to it? Is but then that's sort of taking away from the Frostfell outfits. You know how the Frostfell outfits have that sort of frosty, steamy thing coming off of it?
Hmm, yeah.
That would have been cool. Not a whole lot, just enough to give the illusion of...
It looks nice. Let's see. And of course, there'll be lots of crafting involved starting tomorrow.
Stuff crafting?
What?
Have you checked Denmom?
I was just about to say, I'm going to check out Denmom's site. EQ2.EQTraders. Let's see if she has anything up, or does she have to wait till tomorrow? The only thing she has here is a reminder that it starts tomorrow. No preview available in advance. She will have one up as soon as possible.
So that means tomorrow.
Maybe. It says here, quick reminder that Ilarussi Day events begin tomorrow. No preview available in advance. It may take me a bit to get the page up with all the new crafted goodies.
So patience. That means there's a lot.
There could be a lot coming out. In addition to last year's, that is.
That'd be cool. That's one thing I like about the crafting holidays. You can collect all the wonderful items you need, and you don't have to craft them right then.
Yep.
You just kind of keep them off to the back. Wait.
Yep, unlike the Frostfell stuff.
Yep, you either craft it then or forget it.
I'm surprised they didn't change that.
Well, you know, if they change that, then they sort of change the whole thing of Frostfell. It's part of it, you know, only coming here type thing.
Yeah, but you can do the other seasonal stuff outside of the season.
Well, that's because they're not tied to special crafting equipment either.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm surprised they didn't change it. But, oh well, maybe this is just more to changing all of those items. I don't know these things, although I'd love to work there. I don't.
Now, I know you've had your fill of Dungeon Overlord for the night, but I did want to remind people that tonight, or today, is the last day to put in a name. Your minion says caption contest. Basically, you take a snapshot of one of your minions doing something, add some text, make it funny, and we'll give out some prizes.
Mm-hmm.
First place gets a $10 SOE station cast card, courtesy of moi, and everybody else will get something.
Yeah.
If it makes us laugh, it's good.
It's good, yes.
There's some good ones so far.
Okay, well, you know, I don't think we have anything else really to talk about.
Really?
Well, not really. Not until tomorrow, until we find out what's going on with Sailor Richie Day. The cat's coming along nicely. He actually spent some time downstairs last night. I had to wrangle him to get him upstairs, so I don't think I want to leave him alone, unattended.
No,
overnight.
We'll come back and find the place that is a disaster with him getting
torn apart, or he's eaten something that he shouldn't have, you know. We don't need that.
No, we don't.
But, yeah, he spent some time downstairs, and for some reason, Mao, our old long-haired cat, is being a bitch. I mean, she's the one I posted on Facebook. Look, they're side by side. They're getting along so nicely. And now every time she sees him,
it's because she can't smell him.
I don't know.
And if you were petting her and then petting him, then she was probably getting the scent.
Maybe. Mario doesn't seem to care. Mario's like, hey, yo, what's up, man? Mario's such a ragdoll. Just, whatever.
I know.
The dog, on the other hand, I just want to smack.
He's just wanting to get into his face so bad.
He's just so hyper. Just,
hi, new cat, hi!
Hi, how are you? And the cat's like...
It's getting better.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's it for tonight. It's only 10 minutes until we're supposed to end anyway. I'm going to have this podcast up tomorrow. And that's about it. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it for this week. Next week, we'll talk more about Illyrissi Day and all the crafting stuff that's going to be available or will be available as of tomorrow. And I think I'm going to go downstairs. You know what we have recorded that you haven't taken a peek at yet?
What?
Face Off.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
That's new special effects contest on Sci-Fi?
Yes.
I watched the first one.
And?
And it's good. I like it. So let's go downstairs, watch that for a little bit. Folks on EQ2, I will be back a little bit later on in the evening.
He always is.
Yeah, I try to be anyway. All right. Good night, everyone. I think I'll throw on some music for you guys to listen to. No, I haven't been for the last couple of weeks. But, yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll throw some music on. And I shall return later. Until next week, folks, good night. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Bye!
But first, the horse!
She's a friend.
Stop that!
Right, stop that! Silly! I'm a bit suspect, I think.
Well, that's it. You've wasted another night listening to the Jethel Silverwing Show. I'm your host, Jethel Silverwing.
I'm Elkwin Jenna.
I'm the Drunken Dwarf!
And I'm Cheesy Nibbleman!
This show is brought to you by Online Gaming Radio. Our technical advisor is Spike Link Death. Facts and Intelligence brought to us by The Grassy Knoll. The Jethel Show is produced by
a 4-pound jar of jelly beans,
2 badgers,
a package of expired Twinkies,
a sack of walnuts,
Biff, the weird guy who hands out free candy behind the school in a long trench coat down the street, and a small rock.
Yay, rock!
Be sure to catch the show every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, and 2 a.m. in the U.K.
There's a 2 a.m.? Why doesn't anyone tell me these things?
So, for myself, the Drunken Dwarf, Cheez-It, and my love, Elkin Jenna, keep your arrows in the air and your feet on the ground.